is Tate Pierce, the driver of the number 81 Chevy Monte Carlo Timbrink Underground Special, and we're live on Real Racing USA.
This is real, real, real Racing USA from the Snook River Grill.
That's R cubed.
Live, 2505 Manatee Avenue East in beautiful Bradenton, Florida. I'm Rick Angie.
I'm Bill Green.
Al Gore here with you tonight.
And congratulations on your Oscar, Al.
Thank you very much. It took a lot of work.
So
and
when are you
going to
take when are you going to take your footprints off of global warming?
Well, after I redesigned, we're working on a redesign for the internet. You know, we developed that internet thing, you know, and
I know,
we're working
but
on a redesign.
You're killing
but you sold
global
it.
Warming.
You
you're
know,
making
I don't like
global warming.
You sold it to the Japanese.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter. I don't give a damn. Your mansions that you own, the jets that you're flying all across the country, you're just contributing so desperately bad to global warming.
Well,
congratulations on your Oscar. Yeah,
thank you very much.
It's pretty abusive, Rick. We finally get Al Gore on, and you got to, you know, jump in his chest.
Well, I don't like Al Gore.
Anyway, it's Tuesday night, and it's Real Racing USA.
Live from the Snook River Grill.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Man, did you see Ruderman's crash?
That scared me, because they actually showed the in-car camera.
Oh,
and I was going, please, David, move. Please, David, move. Move, David.
What was even scarier, though, Bill, was when he started moving slow.
Oh, yeah.
That was scary because I didn't know whether
he had the wind knocked out of him, and I imagine if I could talk to him.
What happened? I don't watch that nasty car stuff, so y'all got to fill me in
every week. David Ruderman took one of the hardest crashes ever recorded by NASCAR.
Biffle made another one of his great moves.
Biffle?
Yeah.
Biffle.
Did Biffle go to the Skinner School of Racing?
I guess so.
Did I say that?
Yes, I did.
He got underneath him, and he was below the white line and then touched him and sent him spinning.
Sorry, Mike. It's all meant good.
And when Ruderman hit the wall, though, he was still moving so fast sideways, the car lifted off the ground like an airplane wing and briefly and set back
down. The G-Force impact during David Ruderman's crash Sunday at California Speedway is among the hardest ever recorded, NASCAR officials told ESPN.com Monday. NASCAR doesn't disclose the exact figures. We can't say it's the hardest impact, period, because there are so many variables involved. NASCAR spokesman Ramsey Poston, that's NASCAR.
Toyota been hitting some walls, haven't they?
But it is among the hardest impacts. Yeah, but Toyota scored their first top 10 this weekend, too.
They got a
was
pole.
Was it Montoya?
No, it was Brian Bickert.
Was Montoya driver?
No, he drives a Dodge.
He's a Ford.
Oh.
The in-car video showed Ruderman slumped over the steering wheel, appearing to be knocked unconscious. But MWR Vice President Ty Norris told ESPN.com Monday that Ruderman stressed to the team he was not unconscious but was rather unable to breathe upon impact. And there ain't no damn doubt about that.
Yeah. But I tell you what, it brought up an interesting topic of a discussion on Monday morning on one of the Sirius shows, and that was, do we need to be that close and that informed as fans watching a race to see a guy, and it could have been the worst outcome ever.
What if that had been an in-car in
that could have been
Earnhardt's car?
Thank you. There was you one, but they won't show it.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that.
But if they were
do
live,
we need
like
that? Do we need them to turn to that camera immediately upon the impact and show the guy sitting in the car in any kind of distress, much less what little bit?
I don't know. I just heard they showed a basketball player blowing out a knee, and it was
disgusting. Yeah, you know, and it all started. Well, it didn't all start, but you know, one of the I still can't watch it. I've seen it once.
The Seisman.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. How'd you know I was going to say that?
Because it's
Monday Night Football.
I got cold chills. Yes,
yeah, that guy's Joe Theismann's broken leg. Yes.
And I realized that.
But they must have showed that thing
40 times.
Yeah,
but 40 times.
But the other thing that people are talking about is we already have 6 channels on Sirius Radio dedicated to in-car listening to whatever they've got to say to each other. We've got that already on Track Pass and all the things have.
The value of your entertainment is
how
much you can shock your
That's
audience.
Right. But I mean, do we need to hear Dale Jr. say, you know, the damn car ain't running right? I mean, that kind of
Why
thing.
Why not?
Well, I understand. And that's their point.
Why not? Any fan who goes to the racetrack can hear it.
I understand that. But do we need to? Do the teams need to have that such an open area
That you, how are you going to prevent
that
it?
You get to listen to everything they say.
How are you going to prevent that, Bill?
Oh, there's scramblers. There's things they could do to make it not happen, but that's a different story.
But nasty
they've already
nasty
done it.
Speaking of, by the way, speak before we get lost completely in this, speaking of hard wrecks, we're going to have Timmy Russell.
The ARCA wreck.
ARCA. Yeah. He had that bad wreck at Daytona in the ARCA deal, and he's going to be with us tonight here in a few minutes.
I talked to a friend of Mario Gosselin today, Johnny Jackson.
Yes, yes, yes.
He's going to be running an ARCA car at Lakeland. And by the way, I'm going to the Lakeland race. Got the night off. But he's going to be running his ARCA car up there. And I was talking to him about the run they had up at Daytona and stuff and how everything went. And he rented his car. Rented his car. I forget who he said he rented it to. I said,
Hirsch?
I said, how much do you get for that? He goes, a lot. I said, what do you mean a lot?
20, big time a lot.
20 grand? He goes, no. I said, 30? No. I said, 50? He goes, keep going. I said, I don't want to keep going. I said, and then.
35, yeah, I would think.
And then, and it's not a front runner car. I finished 26th in the race. They had a car that the girl that drives the Great Clips, I forget, her dad owns Great Clips, like 17 Great Clips out in California, sponsored.
What is a Great Clip?
Great Clips.
What's that?
Hairdresser.
It's a hair. It's nothing. You wouldn't something. You wouldn't know.
Yeah, you
ponytail
haven't been
boy.
There in years.
But anyway,
I know what Brett Cream rents is.
But anyway, they were going to rent. They didn't have enough money to rent this car that she was Mario's rental car.
Yes.
That was going to be over the main money.
And this is ARCA, right?
Yeah,
we're talking ARCA.
Yeah, and she ran the car and it had one of the top 10 times at the ARCA race. And they're responsible for it if they wreck it or blow the engine.
Now, you said you were going to go to the ARCA race at Lakeland USA International Speedway.
I said that.
In March.
I'm going.
What, March 17th?
No, 24th.
Well, if you're going to go and you're going to get on a press credential list from Karnak.com or Short Track America or Real Racing USA or any other of the aliases that you deal with,
right?
You're going to have to talk to Don Radenbaugh, who is the PR director of ARCA, and he's going to be with us here in a few minutes, so you could ask him directly if he'll let you come in or not.
Oh, he's going to let me in.
Really?
If not, I'll call my buddy Barry.
I'll call Barry.
Yeah, I'll call Barry. Barry will let me in.
Yeah,
Barry's a good friend of mine.
Okay. Six-pack and you're in, Barry.
Real Racing USA. Bill, what's on your mind?
Nothing, man.
I got more to talk about.
There was a lot of stuff happening in all kinds of places.
What should Mark Martin do?
I believe that Mark Martin has got to take a deep look. If he goes through the next four races before he gets to that Bristol race he's supposed to miss, and he is still top three, even in points, there's so much money in the point fund, he would almost have to see if he couldn't finish out the year.
Oh, they'll let him.
Run until he gets so bad off that he's out of it.
It's totally up to Mark Martin.
Until he falls
out
of the top 10.
Do you know what race, where he's going to be? He's supposed to miss the Bristol race. Do you know where he's supposed to be for that race?
I don't know, but I'm going to tell you guys are making me ill because NASCAR is the sworn enemy of short track
Lake City.
Racing.
I'm trying to get back to the Florida.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, yeah. Columbia. Columbia Motorsports Park. Do you know who he's supposed to be tutoring up there?
Who?
Somebody I've been talking about since he started to make the transition into stock cars.
And who would that be?
Ricky Carmichael.
Ricky Carmichael, huh?
Yeah. He's going to be driving a Lake model at Columbia Motorsports Park.
Is this in the...
And
Goodyear Challenge?
I think that's a Sunbelt race.
Sunbelt race?
Yeah,
it's asphalt.
No, it's a super race, yeah. And I think Goodyear Towns might be there, too.
Does Ricky Carmichael drive a motorcycle around the pits when
Ricky
he's
there? Carmichael.
Is he the motorcycle dude?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's many times over National Motocross Champion.
Yeah, I think about
so
seven.
So that's what Mark Martin's being paid to do the day of that Bristol race. That right
now
he's leading
NASCAR
points.
So now Mark Martin may do the stand-up right guy thing, so to speak, and say, hey, I programmed myself. I said I would be there, and I'm going to be there for this guy in Lake City. And not do it no matter what. That might
you know,
be
if Mark Martin really wanted to help racing, particularly racing in Florida, he would donate some money to the Cure Robert Yoho Fund.
Now, Robert is an entire show by himself, though, you have to admit.
No, he's not.
No, yeah, he no.
He
no.
always tears something up or does
right.
something.
Right, he causes cautions. I like Robert, I like talking to Robert. But
he hits somebody, he does something.
It's not good.
I think I mean just,
well, it's not entertaining, is what the problem
yeah.
is.
He's got the money to fix it, so I guess you can't stop him. It's like our buddy from the old '77 days.
Tony, I hear he's going to make. He's
Tony
Amico's making a
comeback. Yeah, he's picking making rebirth and recomeback.
Tony Amico's coming back.
That'd be cool because Tony's. A
didn't
cool
we? Wa- wasn't? Isn't he the guy that we were going to institute the Tony Amico Award for the years like most courageous driver after scraping himself
I
off the
it was
wall
a hard luck award.
Several times.
Yeah, several times.
The Tony Amico hard luck award.
But you know, you kind of miss that. When you're walking
through
there's
the just pit,
certain,
there's
seeing
just some
that shining bald head puffing that big Cuban cigar.
You know they're
going to
tear up their cars. You just know it.
All eight of them that he brings.
Yeah, he used to bring a whole thing. If he didn't win it, he was in the top 10.
And just think, it came down to 2 weeks. It could be Tony Amico's DeSoto Speedway. Not John Sapergone's DeSoto Super Speedway, because Tony had the money on the table. And John actually got it for cheaper. What happened?
Jack.
We're also going to talk to a guy tonight who knows how to win races, not wreck and not tear stuff up, and absolutely not tear stuff up. Secret of his success is not tear stuff up. And that's Bobby Sears, who has over 20 championships to his credit. We're going to talk to him tonight,
Not to mention we're going to tread on the dirt side a little bit. We're going to talk to James Essex, the Lucas Oil late model announcer. We'll also get to talk to Jeff Leica, the open wheel modified standout from up north, and Steve Francis, the Kentucky Colonel.
Do you want to let me and Bill get me and Rick get a word in edgewise when you get on the phone with Francis, or are you going to hog the interview, Bill?
It's tough. He's one of my buddies.
That's what I figured.
They're tight. You know, you can't.
Yeah, we're also going to talk to
him and Rick Eckert.
Somebody else from the dirt world. We're going to talk to the promoter from Cherokee Speedway up in South Carolina. Gaffney, I believe it is, South Carolina. $10,000 to win, dirt late model race.
Yeah, a lot of dirt guys are thinking about going to that, too.
That's right. A lot of dirt guys have won it. Donnie Moran has won up there. Those big guys always come in and steal that money.
Has some big names in that one.
Then towards the end of the show, we're going to get back to some asphalt. We're going to talk to Chris Fontaine, who's going to tackle the ASA Challenge Series and the late model ASA Late Model South Division. We ain't there yet, Bill.
Okay.
And
didn't want you to forget.
Yeah, Lenny Buff is the promoter, by the way, up at Cherokee Speedway. But we're going to get back to some asphalt with Chris Fontaine, and we're also going to talk to Tim Bryant, the promoter at Five Flags Speedway, which will host the Georgia Asphalt Series. Opening race, I believe it's the opening race. May not be. Maybe it'll be the second race of the year. Whatever it is, it's March 10th. And go ahead, Bill.
And that's the same place that does the Snowball Derby each year, which is one of the big ones we like to cover.
Yes. And we actually have with us here, just sitting in with us tonight, somebody actually knows something about, like, sound.
This is scary.
And yeah, how things are supposed to work with radio stations.
I don't know if people probably don't pay attention, although at the end of every show, we said thank you to all of our board ops whenever I had Short Track USA. And we had several come and go and so forth. Mike Peters with us tonight from IRN.
He's got two microphones. Look at that.
Yeah, pick one, man. Just pick any one. That's probably the best one. Yep.
They got on.
He has his own radio station.
He's running his own station.
Yeah, I play radio. Wait. Turn
it up.
Push the up button.
It's
on.
Yep.
No.
We don't have him turned up over there.
Oh, there's a reason. Don't say another word. There's a reason, Jack, that he's not on.
Oh, we didn't even. We invite guests and we don't even bother to plug them in.
We can't draw flies.
I'm telling you,
can't draw flies.
Hello, hello.
There you go.
Okay.
Real Racing USA. We'll get there in a minute.
That's right. That's why he's here. He's going to help us fix.
There is going to be a green flag to this deal sooner or later here.
Anyway,
kind of like the caution.
What have you been doing, Mike, since you did the Short Track USA show and some of the things we did back then?
Well, as you'd mentioned, I have an internet radio station. We're playing, local Tampa Bay music, and we have a few talk shows on there as well.
Are you hooked up in any way with Rich Garland?
No.
Online Tampa Bay?
No.
Okay, so he does that Entertainment USA thing.
No. Online Tampa Bay.
Online Tampa Bay. I've heard of
Tampa Bay Online. Online Tampa Bay.
Do you remember them, Jack?
Yeah. I didn't remember this intimately. It was one of those. It was a table just like this in a bar called Lug Nuts.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can you imagine? And it's a shame. This is a psycho off in the wrong direction.
It's Terry's brother-in-law.
It is a shame that there is not a place around in every race town called Lug Nuts. A race
bar
and grill.
We don't tell people about the bar we're starting?
Yep.
Yeah.
The old Lever Rocks under the bridge.
Karnak.com.
What?
Bar and grill. No, we're not going to start out that big.
Oh, come on.
No, it's too big. We need
too big.
We just need a whole
restaurant suite.
We need it. Well, hey, Terry started Lug Nuts with one little piece of a plaza, and the next thing you know,
he owned the whole damn plaza.
He was running the parking lot. That's
right.
He had the parking lot.
And, he took that former lingerie business and turned it into Lug Nuts Bar and Grill.
Yeah. Yeah, so Mike.
You guys all start lingerie or something?
No, I didn't.
Hey, I got to tell you now, that billboard out there looked pretty good.
Yeah, it did.
Exotica.
It went good with that figure eight, too, man.
Yeah, it did.
Exotica pro, you know, figure eight.
We were going to try to get Tim Kading on from the World of Outlaws tonight, but apparently that is not going to happen. Joey Saldano, you know, he opened the World of Outlaws weekend out there at Thunderball with a win on Friday. Tim had a pretty big win on Saturday night. You know a little bit about that, Rick?
Yeah, he won at Thunderbolt.
Yeah, I thought you knew something about it, though.
What about it? I said I know about Tim. Tim's a young driver. Won various track championships at Chico Speedway. And I know he'll be on soon.
Yeah,
I went off that chain of thought after he said he wasn't going to be on.
Yeah, Tim capped off a pretty emotional week by dedicating the win to his grandmother, who had passed away earlier in the week, and they started off the whole deal with a tribute lap to his grandma, and ended up pulling a wheelie down the front straightaway after the checkered flag and turning donuts. Crowd went crazy. And
crowd always goes crazy for those
World of Outlaws. Their next deal is at USA Race Park in Tucson, Arizona, and we'll have some information for that, and hopefully some World of Outlaw drivers in the next couple of weeks.
Well, Tim's traveling now, so that's why we can't get all over.
We also, Bill, have an announcement here.
Uh-oh.
We screwed up. We talked about Jerry Nolan.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry Strolin Nolan.
Strolin Nolan.
From Augusta.
Right.
Suicide Circle Speedway in Augusta.
Yep.
Uh-huh. He's not the owner.
Oh.
Bill Farnsworth is the owner.
Oh, well, glad we got that straight.
And Jerry is the...
promoter?
The manager, promoter.
I looked up Jerry on the internet.
Yeah.
He's quite the character.
Oh, he's a character.
He doesn't look anything like he sounds. Yeah. This guy, usually, you know, people sound, got a little bit of look to what they sound like. This guy doesn't look anything.
He's got a bushel full of country sayings.
And he's got his vision show. I wish they got it down here because it looks like it's a barrel of fun.
All right, let's take a break.
Welcome back to Real Racing USA. We are live from the Snook River Grill. Bring you anything and everything that is racing. And take a little trip now, Jack. We're going to go across the country a little bit here, up north at least, and talk to the ARCA PR and Media Director. And gosh, if I can, hopefully I won't mess up his last name, Don Radenbacher. Is that correct, Don?
Pretty closer than most, I guess.
Okay.
Radenbacher is the actual pronunciation. There's no N in there, but no big deal. Glad to be with you guys. How you all doing?
Hey, good, man. Welcome to the show.
Radenbacher.
Very hard to hear you guys are.
Yeah, that's just, I didn't have my mic turned up, but welcome to the show, Don. Go ahead, man.
Everybody's got a question. Nobody knows who goes first.
Hey, Don, how you doing tonight, man?
Great. How are you?
All right. ARCA series getting ready to come to USA Speedway in Lakeland first time. I believe that's happened, right?
Yes, sir. Our first time in our 55 years of doing this. Born in 1953 here in Toledo, Ohio, which is where I am right now. And all the racing places we've gone over the years, through the years, we've been to a lot of them, but we've never been to USA International Speedway, which makes it more exciting for us to be able to showcase our stuff down in Florida. Just come off of Daytona, and we're going back, so this is great news.
Hey, Don, have you ever personally been to USA International Speedway? Do you know what it looks like and what it's about?
No, sir. I have not ever personally been there. I've been, of course, I've seen it a lot on Speed, the Speed Champ, watching the Pro Cup Series there plenty through the years, and I know ASA has taken a few runs there and seen on TV, but no, I've never been there personally. It's just our sort of track, though. We love the short track business. And I know USA is a three-quarter mile with a good bit of banking in it, and I've got to believe we're going to put on a really, really cool show there.
Yeah, it's a great facility. It is
I've heard that.
Yeah, well-rounded facility, great lighting, got the Musco lighting. It's a great place.
I can't wait to see it, and I know we're going to go off under the lights Saturday night, March 24, so we're going to get a chance to showcase our our teams and talent under the lights at Lakeland. It's going to be really cool, and we're really excited about it. It really helps fill a hole, too, because prior to this year, we had always raced at Daytona in February, but we didn't get another show until we went to Nashville Super Speedway in early April. So there was a big gap there, and this helps fill a hole for us and sort of connect our season a little closer.
Speaking of that show at Daytona, what a show it was.
Yeah, you know, great, great show. Too many cautions, but you're going to get that in the restrictor plate business, the way they bunch up and race so closely. But all in all, I thought a great show, our 44th annual appearance at Daytona. We've been there every year since 1964, and, you know, what a way to start your year. It can't get any better than that. And I thought it was especially cool and interesting that, you know, ARCA Series regular, ARCA Remax Series regular Bobby Gearhart, who's been chasing the tour for more than 20 years, stepped up and put down his record fifth victory at Daytona. And that says something when an ARCA team goes to Daytona and mixed among probably six or seven different top-notch country teams and still have an ARCA regular shakeout on top. I think that speaks volume for the talent in this series and the competition level and the quality of drivers we have chasing this thing.
And you mentioned
including Frank Kimmel, who gave a big press conference today out at Toledo Speedway. He came in and gave a little press conference. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, we had Frank Kimmel on the show. You know, out of all the racing and all the series, all different kinds of racing in the world, there's only been one person to win eight championships in motorsports, and that's ARCA racer Frank Kimmel.
Yeah, I think maybe the best way to describe it is he is the only human on Earth to win in a nationally touring Major League Stock Car Series in a series that races on short track, super speedways, and dirt tracks. Don't forget the dirt tracks. We're really proud of our dirt track schedule. We have two dirt track races on our schedule, the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield, a mile dirt, and a mile dirt at DuCoin State Fairgrounds. We were born on the dirt in 53, and 55 years later, we're still racing on the dirt with these big cup-style ARCA cars. So I always like to throw that out, though, there, because I think that's one of the things that makes our series interesting and unique and different from all the rest. We still play on the clip, I guess you could say. From dirt tracks to Daytona, this series does it all.
Now, you mentioned you use restrictor plates at Daytona also. What kind of speeds would they be running, or are you worried about, if they didn't use some kind of restrictor plate?
Well, I mean, if they opened up the engines and allowed a much bigger hole, you know, thus taking in more fuel and air, they'd climb well over 200 mile an hour, 210, 215, if not 220, the kind of horsepower these engines can make these days. So, we just don't feel, obviously, that's safe, and we don't think we can keep, from an aerodynamic standpoint, I don't think you can keep the footprint on the ground, so to speak, those speeds with a stock car. Once they lift, you know, they're up and over and gone. So
forget Hans devices. You'd need parachutes.
Yeah, parachutes for sure. I don't know how a soft landing would be, but my goodness. There's no way around it. You've got to restrict the speeds there to keep it safe and keep the cars on the ground. They're already running as close as can be, and, you know, if you turned up the wick even more.
Anything else special you do for Daytona?
Pardon me?
Anything else special they have to do for Daytona when it comes to running that big a track at those kind of speeds?
They run a bigger blade in the back, and between the restrictor plate and nothing really comes to mind. I'm not the most technical savvy guy on earth either from the ARCA PR department. But outside of the restrictor plate that reduces the horsepower drastically, I should say we do have the Mallory ignition, which is mandatory in all ARCA Remax Series machines, no matter the racetrack, and the Mallory ignition limits engine RPMs to 8,800. So not only is the engine restricted by the restrictor plate, it couldn't climb over 8,800 RPMs regardless, restrictor plate or no restrictor plate, because of the Mallory ignition that's in place. And that's designed to, when engines are revving at a higher RPM way beyond 8,800, they're more prone to failure, and that's in an effort to keep costs down and keep these engines alive, healthier, and longer, we restrict the RPMs to 8,800 by the Mallory ignition box. So I guess those two things, the Mallory ignition box and the restrictor plate, is how we woe them up at Daytona and Talladega.
That means it's all gear, I guess, right? Go ahead, Rick.
Pardon me?
I was just thinking it's all gearing then. You got to gear it right to get up to as much speed as you can, but yet keep under that 8,800.
Yeah, and that's where the sharp crew chiefs and crew people come in play, and that's where I would have to bail on, because I wouldn't have a clue as to how to gear these things to make maximum horsepower on those tracks given their restrictions. But, you know, they know what they're doing, these guys under the hoods and under the cars and gals, and they do it quite well. So, hey, just to have Daytona and Talladega on your schedule is a treat. And I think I'm correct in saying, in fact, I know I am, this will be the first time a touring series has raced at USA International Speedway that has also raced at Daytona.
Goody's Dash,
I think.
You used to race. That I was think their they second used race.
We're not trying to burst your bubble, mind yeah, you. But
it
was,
no, it was the Goody's Dash series ran at
Lakeland, yes, sir.
At Lakeland? Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Gosh darn, an eyewitness anyway.
You almost had it.
How many years you been with Arca, Don?
I honestly did not know. I forgot all about the Goody's Dash. Is that thing still alive even?
No, it's gone.
I think it's gone.
It's a shame, too, because that was a good series.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yep. How many years have you been with ARCA, Don?
I've been with ARCA. I've just started my 11th season, and prior to that, I was PA announcer at Eldora Speedway, one of my most favorite places.
Oh man, Eldora!
You have some stories to tell.
You know one of my buddies.
God, do I ever! I love that track, and I did a lot of PA announcing prior to my tenure at ARCA, and before that, I was a Great Lakes tugboat captain for 12 years. So. From one extreme to the other, but I'm really happy where I am right now and proud of my time and position with ARCA. It's a great company run by great leadership, founded in 1953 by the late John Markham, who was a pal of Bill France Sr.'s, who founded NASCAR, of course. But, you know, it's still a family-owned company, ARCA is, and it's still owned by the same family. Markham family still owns the ARCA sanction. In fact, the president of ARCA today, Ron Draeger, is the grandson of club founder John Markham. So it's still all in the family. Worked for great people, very bright people, and great leadership. And it's just provided great opportunity for me personally, and it's just been a great ride altogether. I love the series. The short track, dirt track, and super speedways, we get to do a little bit of everything, and it's just really neat.
Now, they take those 3,400-pound cars on the dirt track?
Absolutely. It's the same cars they run at Chicagoland or Kansas Speedway or MIS or Pocono. All they do is they take the same 3,400-pound stock car. They raise it up a little bit. They do some different things to the radiators to help keep them cooler on the dirt track. They'll put a little cow pusher, we call them, on the front to keep mud out of the grill area so the engine doesn't overheat. And the only thing they do different is put on Hoosier tires. It's a treaded dirt track tire. But it is the exact same steel body, 3,400-pound, 110-inch wheelbase ARCA Remax Series Cup car.
You don't go packing
the track. Ed Trader brings his – he pulls one of his Cup cars out of his garage and comes to DeCoin every year and slaps some Hoosier dirt track tires on it and races with it. He won the race last year at DeCoin.
That's amazing. That is Tony amazing.
Stewart won there, I think, in 03 with us. So.
In the ARCA?
Yeah, he won the Stewart came 3 years in a row to the DeCoin State Fairgrounds. I heard him say in Pennsylvania once he was speaking, he said, man, I'd like to try one of those ARCA dirt track races one day. I told my boss went over and talked to Ken Schrader and said, see if he wants to come. He came. The first year he got in a Frank Kimball backup car. He finished second to Frank Kimball 2 years in a row. The third year he came, he got on the PA and said, I can't tell you exactly what's going to happen, but I can guarantee you Frank Kimball isn't going to win this race. And by God, Frank Kimball didn't win that race. Tony Stewart won it in his third attempt, and we haven't seen him since. I guess he conquered the place and moved on.
Get out while you're on top.
Yes.
Then he went and bought Eldora.
Speaking of Kimball, who are some of the guys who stand a chance to unseat Kimball this year as the champion?
Well, I think there's a couple of possibilities. Philip McGilton, a name you probably haven't heard yet, Philip McGilton out of Marion, Illinois, is driving, just announced today, just driving the full season for Bruco Motorsports in the ARCA Remax Series. Bruco fields top-notch NASCAR Busch Series teams and has for years. He'll be one to watch. There's a rookie out of Phoenix, Arizona, Michael McDowell, running an Eddie Sharp Racing Dodge. He is going to be really tough, I think. Billy Vettorini, third-generation racer, is going to race every year. He's going to be one to watch for sure. Bobby Gearhart, who opened with his record fifth Daytona victory, is running the full tour this year. He's going to give Frank Kimmel a hard time all season long. Justin South and a Mark Gibson Cunningham Motorsports number 59 Dodge out of Hueytown, Alabama, is going to be a factor this year. The 11 car, Brian Silas, that's a name you guys are probably familiar with. I think he's from Stuart, Florida. Brian Silas and Andy Hillenburg's Fast Track Chevrolet going to run the full season in the 11 car. I think he's going to be tough. Justin Allgaier, kid who won on the Springfield Mile Dirt last year, going to run the whole thing. Allgaier finished third in the Chili Bowl this year as well and was 10th in points with us last year. I think he's going to be one to watch. Gosh, there's others as well that don't necessarily come to mind right now, but I think old Franco is going to have his hands full this year.
You got a lot of young guns, so to speak, coming into the ARCA series because they want to get that as their next stepping stone to get that opportunity maybe to go on up the ladder. A lot of influx, new drivers, new teams, and new cars. But how do you guys handle getting all the information you need about them, and then what do you think of the new crop of youngsters coming along?
Well, it's tough to keep up with all the new talent coming in and keep up with all the information, but we do our best to get there. The new talent, I mean, it's part of who we are, and it's sort of part of our niche or position in the industry. We've not only become a great place to race and a great place to have a career. Frank Kimmel has, eight championships later, has done very well here. But we've also become the go-to series to develop drivers, not only drivers, but crew people, too. We're seeing a lot of crew people come into this series, bust out pit stops, learn the trade, and move on to the NASCAR level. But most of the drivers are coming in like gangbusters, lots of driver development teams. And one of the reasons I think they come to the ARCA Remaxer is to develop their drivers is because an ARCA car and a Cup car are the exact same thing. So they're both 3,400-pound, 110-inch wheelbase stock cars. They are the exact same machine, a Cup car and an ARCA car. Cup runs on Goodyears. We run on Hoosiers. But it's the same car, different stickers. So if you get pretty good at driving an ARCA Remax Series car on many of the same super speedways that Cup races on, we interchange a lot, then chances are this is going to be a good training ground if you one day are fortunate enough to get a shot in NASCAR. But what a better place to start. Same car, we run on the same track, and that's why you're seeing all these NASCAR teams come here with their young kids, their development drivers, Evernham Motorsports, Roush Racing, Hendrick Motorsports. You can go right on down the line, Robert Yates Racing. Most of them are here now taking a hard look at this series and bringing their talent through ARCA.
You know, that, Don, that's one of the things. I was listening to a show, I think it was on Race Talk Live. I may be wrong there, but it was racetalkradio.com.
Racetalkradio.com?
Yeah, we were listening to, we talked to those guys last week. I was listening to the show, their ARCA show from a couple of weeks ago, and I was in the car on a long ride, and I listened to the whole thing. I had it on tape, and I was fascinated that they were talking about that exact thing, that there's, for some people, there's maybe a little bit of a downside, or at least the perception of a downside, with the other teams coming in, with the development teams coming in from NASCAR, and the whole deal about provisionals and the regulars being able to make the races and not be booted out, so to speak, by the ARCA, is that, or by the NASCAR type teams coming in, is that a real issue, or is that just talk?
Well, you know, someone asked Frank Kimmel that question at the press conference today. Are you bothered by the fact that some of the top NASCAR teams in the country today are here in the ARCA Remax Series developing drivers? And, you know, is it taking your money? Is it taking your glory? Has that bothered you? And his reply, which I thought was pretty smart. He said, you know, absolutely not. I mean, it's good for our series. They bring media attention to our series. And then he mentioned that, heck, we had Juan Montoya driving the ARCA RE/MAX series last year in two events. You know, how cool was that? It really boosted the media attention. And it, you know what? Yeah, they do take some of the money and take some of the points and positions, but it's also especially gratifying when an ARCA RE/MAX series regular can whoop up on these guys, and they do from time to time. We just went over it. Bobby Gearhart at Daytona this year beat seven. There were probably seven different NASCAR Nextel Cup teams in that field with younger development drivers. Gearhart won. Last year, you know, talking about Frank Kimmel, beat some high-quality teams at Talladega. It only makes the victory sweeter, in their opinion, and I think in mine, too. I mean, we're an open series. We don't turn anyone away. If you meet the requirements to run in this series, then and meet up with all the standards and rules and regulations, then you're welcome to come here, whether you're black, green, red, purple, yellow, cup, motorcycle, automobile racer. If you meet the requirements and criteria, what it takes to run here, then who are we to say you can't?
So it sounds like a good trade-off for you. That's I tend to agree. I think it's a good trade-off.
Do you have any?
It works both ways, but yeah, I think it is. I mean, they have the NASCAR teams and the attention they bring to the series have elevated the focus on what we do here, and that's good for everyone.
What's the age limit for your driver?
Got to be 16 years young to run on a short track, and a short track is defined in the ARCA RE/MAX series as any track 1 mile in length or less, and to run on a super speedway, which is over a mile, you have to be 18.
Okay. You know, to me, what my opinion is, the ARCA series has become what the Busch series once was. The developmental drivers coming in. Of course, you've got the veterans that have, you know, always run ARCA. But you used to have that in the Busch series. Now the Busch series has become almost Saturday NASCAR, Nextel Cup racing.
Yeah. I guess the while some drivers are not altogether happy with NASCAR teams coming to ARCA and whooping up on the smaller guy, I suppose on the next level, some of the NASCAR Busch Series teams aren't altogether pleased with Cup teams showing up and stealing all their thunder on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. So it's all relative. I can't speak on behalf of the NASCAR Busch Series, but I can't speak on behalf of ours. And
well, you're doing a fine dance, I must admit.
Cool to have him here.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you one thing's for sure, Don. On the 24th of March, ARCA's going to steal all the short track thunder in Florida. There's no doubt about that.
No doubt about it.
That's going to be the biggest show.
I hope so.
Yeah, no doubt.
I hope the people come out in gangbusters to see us. We've never been there. We've been racing for 55 years. We're the second longest running stock car sanction on Earth, second only to NASCAR, which was born 4 years prior, 1949. So we're trying to create a lot of buzz over the race, and we think for good reason. And I think if the folks will come out, they'll understand what we're getting at here.
Well, I got to ask you something. Tomorrow at Bristol Motor Speedway, NASCAR opens up their real testing of their cars of tomorrow that are going to be raced at Bristol come time to get racing there. Do you think that will have an effect over the next couple of years when they bring those cars fully on board and everybody's racing those look-alike kind of cookie-cutter cars? On your series, and you may have to make some changes to be still remain the feeder series, so to speak?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're certainly taking a hard look at that right now. The car of tomorrow, interesting technology for sure, but, you know, I can tell you that we are going to be racing in today's machine, however you want to describe it, but the current machine that NASCAR or that we're using now is the same machine that will be available or will be running in our series through the 09 season. Now,
well, you're going to have a lot of those cars available.
But, you know, we have patterned our cars off the NASCAR Nextel Cup Series over the years. There's no doubt about it. But I can tell you that we're going to stick with what we've got. through the 09 season, and, you know,
well, I could,
there I couldn't say.
I can see that that's a smart move on ARCA's part, because you're going to have a lot of cars available now. As they go to the car tomorrow, they're going to have to get rid of some of those cars that you're running.
And I'm thinking the team owners over there are going to appreciate having the market or ARCA to sell off some equipment.
Hey, Don, man, we appreciate you taking time. Sorry you took up so much time. I know you got baton class you're going on there or something.
Yeah, my daughter's having baton class.
We're going to hook up with Tim Russell here in just a few minutes and talk about his little excursion over at Daytona and what he's got in store.
And didn't he just win a big late model race there somewhere?
Yeah, Saturday night he won the World of opening Sunbelt late model race at Citrus County Speedway.
I read that. Right. How cool. He's really talented. I hope he gets an opportunity day with a big-time team. He's talented enough to be there. Great. I'm glad you're having him.
Yeah, and he didn't just happen to have a bigger motor or something. He snookered one of the best drivers in Florida for that win on the very last lap. So
he broke.
Oh, no kidding. The pass came on the last lap, huh?
Yeah, it did.
Wow, cool. That's great. He's a neat guy.
All right, Don. Well, we'll be looking for you at Lakeland, man.
Thanks. Appreciate all your time tonight.
All right, March the 24th, the ARCA Series. We'll see you there.
Don, we appreciate him dropping by. ARCA Series looks like it's in good hands and going to have a good time.
I'm looking at a picture of those ARCA cars on the dirt.
Real racing.
On the dirt?
Yeah.
That's badass.
Yeah, it is.
I'd love
Real Racing USA.
Huh? That's real racing, then.
That's real racing USA.
We'll be back right after this.
Real Racing USA, back on the airwaves. Hey, Jack, want to join us?
Catch up, Jack.
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
yes,
I got a special announcement.
Oh, this
I
is Real
make.
Racing USA.
I got a special announcement I want to make before the show ends.
Were you getting married?
No. God, no.
On the air, let's get married.
God, no. It's about another internet radio show that I might be concocting. I haven't told you guys about this yet.
Oh, my God. An announcement from Rick.
Yeah. Bill, you want to introduce our next guest?
What's the announcement?
I'm not going to do it right now.
Well, then that's not a way to treat us. Now you've been anticlimactic per Tim. Tim.
No,
Russell.
No, the climax is building.
Tim Russell, the ARCA Series, and Citrus County Hot Shoe, apparently, has joined
hot
us.
Hot Shoe everywhere.
I know. This man's tearing them up, and you guys have to tell me about the snooker move there on the last lap. Or actually, Tim, tell me about the last lap at Citrus. What were you thinking? How'd you get that done?
Oh, man. That was the first time ever being at that place, so, you know, to run second most of the night there was pretty good, and we had pretty much to settle in for second, and with coming to get two to go, going off into one, Schofield broke something, and I don't know if he broke something or he split up going into one while I was riding his bumper to take advantage of it, and his mistake was there. We capitalized on it, and we passed him and then cruised to the victory from there.
Well, Timmy, you just blew my whole story. I had this story concocted how you swung underneath it and snookered one of the best racers in Florida and stole the win from him, and now you're going to tell us he broke.
Jack had you just short of Superman. Okay,
so. Schofield said he broke a rotor.
Yeah. There's plenty of times where we've been leading and we broke and, you know, finished second or third, and the guy was behind us the whole race won, so you take what you can get, you know.
Tim, coming, you know, getting that win at Citrus County Speedway had to be really good, but coming off of that Daytona crash, that had to be even better.
Definitely, you know, that was a hard hit, and I just hate it for the whole Renai team over there with Hagen's racing. We had a good top five going, and probably was going to end up second or third, and just trying to mind their own business and come down to four to go, and was sitting in fifth place looking to pass the fourth, and next thing you know, we got right reared, and we're heading at the fence, and car's destroyed, and I was sore for about a day and a half, and then I was able to jump in the super late model at New Smyrna on Tuesday night and come back and finish second. So that was some good medicine there to come back and run second the first night of speed week.
Would you say that's your hardest hit?
Oh, definitely, by far.
How fast do you think you were going when you hit that wall?
180 at least. I was never even had time to lift off the gas.
Now, how do you, unlike a regular wreck where you may tumble even and you kind of scrunch down and you hold on tight, that kind of thing, how do you cope with something when you're doing 180
Excuse
and suddenly
me, I gotta go throw
And suddenly in just seconds, you're pointed at the wall, and there's not much you can do. You hit the brake, but you ain't slowing nothing down yet.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you snap your fingers, that's how quick it was. We were coming to the start-finish line right on the bottom, looking to get inside of Legacy, and next thing I know, I'm looking at the fence and sliding back down the track. So, I mean, I watched the in-car camera from the roof cam, and the motor didn't even change pitch. That's how fast it happened. So.
How do you cope with that? Do you pound the steering wheel, cuss out loud? I mean, what do you do when you know you've had such a good run going and it's all gone for naught suddenly?
I was mad, I mean, but, you know, stuff happens, and especially at Daytona. But you got to just remember that you're always on TV, and just keep all your emotions held inside, and you can let them go when you get in a place by yourself.
But. Yeah, you were on TV. I was in a restaurant, and it wasn't the Snook River Grill either. I was in a restaurant eating with my wife while they had it on the TV screen, and saw the wreck. And when I saw it, I completely lost my appetite. As a matter of fact, we got up and left because it was like, man.
Devastating.
Oh, it was horrible. Man.
Now, did you see David Ruderman's wreck at California?
Yeah, I saw the in-car camera of it. It was bad.
Is that kind of like what happens? You just kind of get stunned at first, and then you realize you're still in a race car, but you got to do something about it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you don't expect to happen, and all of a sudden it's just like nothing you've ever felt, and it takes the breath away from you, and you finally come back to your senses, and you realize you need to get out in case anything's on fire, or make sure you get out and get medical attention when you can.
Now that you've got that lesson out of the way, what's next? Tim, it wasn't but a couple of years ago that you were just dominating the limited late model scene here in Florida, moved up to Supers, and then jumped into the ARCA car. How's that progression been for you so far?
Last year was a so-so year for us. You know, we came off of 05 when we were in a total of 18 races and won 10 out of them and 16 top fives, and that was our best year by far ever in my whole racing career. So, and last year, you know, we won a big race in the Clyde Hart Memorial and ended up winning the Rookie of the Year in the Sunbelt Series. We just didn't have the results that we were looking for. I think towards the end of the year, we started getting our program turned around and got accustomed to the super late model racing, and then made our few ARCA starts and had a good run going at Kansas, good solid top five, and cracked the spark plug there and dropped the cylinder, so we ended up finishing 15th there, and then went on to Chicago and qualified 5th and ran 8th, so not too bad there, and we're looking forward to going to Lakeland now this year, and I think we'll have a real good car there and looking forward to go get a top five finish there.
How much of an advantage do you think you have going to Lakeland, being that you've raced there so many times and the regulars there in the ARCA series haven't?
Oh, I think anybody from Florida that's raced at Lakeland's going to be running the ARCA race has got an advantage over everybody because they know what that track will do from daytime to nighttime, and they know where they can pass and, you know, where they can make the car really work there. That's going to play into our hands a little bit there.
You know, when you were running that limited car, you had a lot of success all over the state, but especially at DeSoto. I mean, you just totally dominated down there. What made that track so special for you?
We just, you know, we found the right setup that we needed to make our car go fast there, and I think we went down there a total of 6 times and won 5 of the races there and fell on the pole 3 or 4 times, and that's just a fun track to race. You know, it's small, but you got to be up on the wheel every lap, and just exciting to go there.
No matter how big you make it, even when you make it into NASCAR and all the other places you'll go, we always look forward to maybe taking that little bit of time off and coming back down to Florida and running some of those tracks.
Definitely. You know, if I do get my opportunity to make it into the Busch Series or Truck or Cup Series one day, I'm still going to keep my racing operation down here open and may put a couple of young drivers in it and, you know, help out people that need a hand trying to get up in the racing world. And that way I got something to come play with, too, when I come back here.
Hey, listen, now, you've always had a lot of fans out of Florida, but now in the ARCA series, and that actually the crash, I think, is probably driving a few more fans to take a peek at you and see what it's all about. How is it to deal with the fans in the ARCA series? Do they come out in droves, and they want autographs, they want all the things that you got to give a little time to them. How are you coping with that and getting your name out there a little more and getting a little bit more well-known?
Oh, it's always a blast going and doing, like, autograph sessions with fans. It's neat to meet new people and all the people that support you, and you know they support you through the bad times and the good times. And we've been getting all kinds of fan mail recently. People have been contacting us through our website and sending autograph requests, and I think we get at least 2 or 3 of them a day. So it's pretty neat to feel that feeling of people are, you know, just watching whatever you do and supporting you and everything you do.
Yeah, at 23 years old, that's got to feel pretty good. And are you going to run the whole ARCA series this year?
Oh, we're only running a handful of races this year, and possibly looking to do some maybe a couple truck races. So we're just going to play it by ear and take what we got this year. You know, we got a full schedule of super late model racing and then our ARCA race that we're doing, so we got a lot on our plate.
If you get to do them, which truck races are you going to do?
As much as we can.
If you get to do them, which truck races will you do?
I'm not quite sure yet. We're working out the details on that. So.
Oh, okay. Don't want to.
So we will certainly see. Are you racing anywhere before the ARCA race at Lakeland?
Yeah, definitely. We're going to go to Bradenton on March 10th and run one of the AACS races. And then March 16th we'll be racing the Bright House Challenge race at Speed World, and then I'm going to run the Sunbelt race at Speed World the night before the ARCA race. So
stay busy.
3 weeks coming up.
Yeah, stay busy. How many cars you got in the shop?
Right now we got two.
Okay.
So
I figured the ARCA car was a little different than what you're using.
What's your number in the ARCA series?
We're running the number 9 for Hagen's Racing out of Indianapolis, Indiana.
There you go. And, of course, number 36 at all the races in Florida.
Yep.
Just happens to be a relative of yours that had that number, huh?
Yeah, my dad made that number famous around here, so it's kind of been a family number. And when I started racing, I took it over, and he's been kidding around with me the past year or so. We've been thinking about getting him back into a car for a couple races, and he says, well, you got my number now, so you're going to have to change to a different number.
So, there you go. All right.
He could be the 36P pop.
There you go.
Hey, listen, man, it's awesome to see you getting doing so well in the ARCA series and other series outside the state, but it's also nice to see you still drop by and visit with us at one of the tracks. So we appreciate you taking time and talking with us today, too.
Thank you guys for having me on here. I always enjoy coming on here.
Hey. Well, hopefully I'll get to talk to you in the winner's circle at DeSoto, Tim.
All right, that'll work.
All right, brother.
See you, man.
All right,
see you guys.
How cool is that? Tim Russell, after a big hit and a big win, back-to-back almost.
You know, he's racing in the fast. He races in a lot of the fast car stuff. And why don't you see if we can get a hold of Bobby Sears. Let's talk to Bobby Sears for a minute.
Yeah, well, let's do that.
I need a number for Bobby. There's no number on the paper.
Oh, there's no number?
There's no number there?
Nope. Not that I see.
Right there, Bill.
It's not there?
No, there's no number.
Thank
Just
you.
Just what he does.
Hey, Bobby, Bobby, give us a call. We're going to take a break. You got to give us a
call. Throw a quick
call.
Break up, yeah.
Okay, let's save
Let's throw Bill this curveball.
Yeah, I can't call him. No
it's
number.
Baseball season.
Yeah, if you're a Bobby Sears fan, call him. Tell him to call us. We appreciate that. Thank you. We'll be right back after this.
Real Racing USA, back on the internet. Everybody else is doing something else, so I don't have nothing to talk about.
Well, that's too bad, man. Here we go. Yeah, I gave you guys the paper to talk to we were going to talk Bobby
yeah,
Sears.
Yeah, you gave us a paper with Bobby Sears' name.
I didn't put his number down.
Yeah,
here.
That's right. Yeah.
We'll have to catch up with Bobby later on the show. Meanwhile,
other guys don't have this problem.
Goodness, you know, I'll tell you, it is going to be very cool to go to Lakeland to see an ARCA race.
Yeah, no doubt.
And especially there. That'll be very cool. And, you know, one of the things, Rick, we got to remember, and we cannot forget this, is we need to talk to Frank Kimmel about that giant monster bomber race
at
Kentucky Speedway. Is that where it is?
Yeah, because that's supposed to be coming up very, very soon.
Well, I think it's June, if I'm not mistaken. But I could be wrong. Okay, I think Bill's got everything
I think
under
we saved
control.
The day.
We're going to get back to something real on Real Racing USA. What do you have, Bill?
I was wandering through the pits at North Florida Speedway, and I ran up on a guy and kind of asked him a little bit about his racing and stuff. It turned out to be a fairly interesting brief chat I had with him. And so I invited him to come on the show. We'll talk a little bit about dirt, and he's an open-wheel modified driver, Jeff Leka. Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well.
Now, listen, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where you come from, how did you get into open-wheel modified racing, and why the trips to Florida each winter?
Well, I've been in racing now for about 18 years. Family, all my families did it. My uncle, Jim Leka, he won the UMP national title in 89 in the late models. And I kind of just kept on going from there. We started driving a late model a little bit, and then we got into modifieds, and I really enjoy the modified. We run right around a lot in Illinois. We come to Florida every year for the Winter Nationals. We run over to Eldora. But we've did quite a bit in the modifieds. Back in 97, we ran for the Winston Racing Series short track deal and won that, and then came back in 1999 and won the Winston Racing Series national title, which was 99 was the last year they had the Winston Racing Series and it switched to Dodge. And I've been second in UMP national deal. I've won the state, won the region. I've been 4 points from winning the national title in the UMP deal. Won a lot of races, won a lot of big races. It's kind of been one of the things that's been in my blood and been in my family, and we just keep right on doing it.
And it says here on your website, in 2005, you raced 60 times, 16 different tracks in 4 different states.
Yeah.
You guys must be hell on equipment.
Well, you know, and that's true. You know, we got good motors, Hovis, racing engine out of St. Charles, Missouri does my motors, and then Bob Pierce does my race cars, and Bob Pierce is a big name, you know, in late models, and he builds modified. So, you know, we race a lot, you know, 60 plus nights a year, that's a lot of racing. And you know, like we said, like you know, says on my website, we do won the last year at the end of the year the UMP Nationals at Rossburg, Ohio, Eldora, Tony Stewart's racetrack. We won that. I mean, that's a big race to win. So we get around quite a few places.
Well, now 64 races in a year. Even if you don't wreck one, you've worn out some stuff.
Well, and that's where we have 2 cars, sometimes 3 cars. And you got to keep, you know, you can't run the same car, you know, and you can't run it in the ground because then it ain't worth nothing. So you run it, you know, about 20, 25, 30 nights and then sell it and buy another new one. And that way there, whoever buys it's getting a good car that's not wore out. So you're keeping a new equipment and treating the people out there that's buying them right.
So you change cars quite often then?
Yeah, we do. Matter of fact, you know, I took 2 cars to Florida down in East Bay. A guy next to me wrecked his car and came over and bought my brand new car. I didn't even get to race it. So we're working on, right now we're working on building another new car, and we'll be the 17th, and next month we'll go to Kentucky Lake and race there, and then we'll come back home, which is about 5 hours back home to Illinois, and then the following weekend we'll go to Western Kentucky for the Bluegrass Bash.
Well, now let me ask you, though, if you've built a race car up, you've got a racing motor in it, you're prepared to go out and win in that car, what kind of money do you sell something like that for after you put all that sweat equity into it?
You know, with a motor, turnkey, ready to race, you're looking at one of these cars probably around $32,000.
Oh, that's not bad.
That's not for a winning race car.
Yeah, if you're going to go win something, he's been winning races.
Now,
every time
how close are these cars to a dirt late model?
What's that now?
How close are these open-wheel cars, the strictly dirt open-wheel cars? I mean, I watch them race, and, you know, the physics of them and everything basically look like a dirt late model. How close are these cars?
You know, honestly, they're getting closer because right now we run like a stock rear end in ours and stock front clips, and the late models run a quick change rear end and two of their front end, which next year, this year they gave us the spoiler on the back like the late models got. Next year they're giving us the quick change. So that's the whole back of our car is going to be like a late model. It's just the front of it. We have to run a stock front clip. And then we have to run a steel block, which the late models can run aluminum blocks, which that's big money right there. You know, our motors are, you know, $10,000 to $15,000, and their motors are $35,000. So, you know, as far as that, that's a big difference. I mean, as far as if you put them on the clock time to time, we ain't too far. You know, fast time like the Farmer City is, like 12.8, and we're at, you know, 14.2. So we ain't too far off of them.
No doubt. You know, and like I said, when I watch them at East Bay or Volusia, you know, the symmetrics of them are the same as the way the frames tweak on them. But then again, like you said, the cast iron motor, the open wheel modified class was born as a money-saving class, basically.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you what, that's getting out of hand. You know, we all want to do this, we all want to win, but it seems like every year they keep giving us this here, we can do this, we can do that. Well, it's starting to get more money and more money, and you know, that's fine, but the racetracks are not paying no more money.
We've heard that.
We got to get, you know, and you got to get all these tracks together. You know, some of these tracks I race at home here, on a regular basis, only 700 to win.
Right. Now, you know, and that's very similar. You know, people in Florida say, oh, well, you know, the guys that come from up north, they'll come down here and go, oh, they pay so much more money up north. But we talk to the track promoters and all that, and it's basically the payoffs are the same everywhere in the country except when you've got the big, giant, huge $10,000 to win events.
Exactly. And then, you know, we have to pay, you know, like East Bay, that's a good race. You know, I've been down there every year, and every year but one year they've had the East Bay Winter Nationals for the Modifieds. We missed the first year, and ever since then we've been there. And, I mean, I've ran, I've led that thing when it was $10,000 to win. I led it all the way up to 70-some laps, and a wreck came out. And nobody believes when the tide comes in down at the racetrack. Well, it bit me because I went backwards, came back to third. I raced 100 laps and chased Chad Kinder, nose to tail. You know, I've been there. I've ran second. I've ran third. I've ran fifth. I've not made the show. But, you know, that's a good paying deal. I mean, he has a good deal there. And Volusia has started. This year they've upped their pay some. So we kind of take that going to Florida as vacation for us. But on the other hand, we go race two. So it gets us ready to come back home, and we know what our car is going to do. You know, we've done, you know, broke our motors in, we broke everything, gears in, we're ready to go race when we get home.
Yeah, if you can get lucky and hit it like Steve Arpin, let's say, out of Canada did this year and got 7 out of 9 races there at the beginning of the season with the North Florida Nationals and the Volusia run, you can sure pad your bank account a little bit and help you through the rest of the season.
Yes, you know, and that's true. And Steve, I mean, he's a good, I know him real well, and good kid, and he's probably got a real bright future ahead of him because being young as he is. And he does drive a good race. You know, he is a good race car driver. A little aggressive sometimes, but, you know, that'll all come in time. He'll change his driving style some. But he's somebody that people's going to look at. And, you know, maybe he'll be in a bush ride, maybe he'll be in a truck ride, and maybe not. But, you know, that's what they're looking for, them younger guys. And he's somebody that I really feel they'll look at.
Jeff, is there any plans on you moving up?
No. You know, but honestly, I'm too old. And why I say that is because in 1999, I won the national deal, the Winston Racing Series. I met Jack Roush, and that's when they started. Matter of fact, that's when they did the Gong Show deal. It was the first time for it. And Jack told me that I was too old. He said, Jeff, I'm not taking that away from you. You know, you probably make a heck of a race car driver in this. But he said, we're looking at the younger guys. And that's when Kyle Busch got in there. But, you know, I can understand his deal. You know, older guys are setting their ways, and we're going to do what we're going to do and how we do it. And them guys spend that kind of money, they're looking to groom the guys the way they want. And, you know, hey, I've got to meet a lot of people. I met Dale Earnhardt. You know, I've met a lot of people. And Jeff Burton, I mean, you know, we became pretty good friends. But I like doing what I'm doing. You know, I would love to be doing what they're doing, but I know right now, and, you know, I'm being told that we're just too old. So we'll just keep doing what we're doing and keep winning races. And, you know, Kenny Wallace, Kenny Schrader, they've all drove my race cars. 2 years ago, I had Jimmy Spencer junk a race car of mine. Cost me a bunch of money. But, you know, we did a thing for Kyle Petty, and I took my race car down there, and they did a race for Kyle Petty to raise money at Kenny Schrader's racetrack in Peeley, Missouri, and I told Spencer, don't wreck my race car. This is the only car I got right now, and I was running second to Denny Schwartz in the UMP deal in the nation, and he junked it.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
Literally junked my race car, and then got out and said he was sorry. And, you know, that's easy for him to say, but now I got to fix this.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we've talked many times on our radio shows about that lost, decade of drivers that they kind of jumped over and didn't look at the 29 to 33 year olds anymore with some experience. They went right to 15 and 18 year olds and so forth. Has that ever, over the years past, maybe 3 or 4 years ago when it first kind of started coming to light that they were doing that, did that kind of like irritate you a little bit that they'd kind of jumped over that entire group of guys that were great racers and really needed their opportunity?
You know, not really, because here's the thing. I mean, we're in dirt country. This is all dirt racing. We don't have no asphalt tracks around here. So for them guys to spend that kind of money, I can kind of see. Now, if I raced asphalt and did as well on asphalt as I do on dirt, and they just kind of looked over me, yeah, that'd make me mad. But you got to kind of look where they're spending. They're not spending $100,000 or $50,000, they're spending big money. So they got to have somebody that's raced on asphalt. And, you know, it showed that they can do good on asphalt to put them in one of them cars. I understand that 100%. You know, and a lot of guys say, you know, Tony Stewart told me one time it's easier to drive on asphalt than it is dirt. Well, I'll never know because I've never drove on asphalt. But, you know, it's just one of the things. You know, I don't hold no grudges. I just, you know, I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I've got a lot of good people out there to help me. Larry Miller from Tampa, I mean, helps me out. You know, and I'm in Illinois. I'm, 1,100 miles away from him. But, you know, he helps me out. So it's just little things like that I appreciate. It takes you from everybody. I mean, I've got an HPR. Sullivan, Illinois helps me. Redline Oil, I mean, Canaan. All them people help. So that really helps my racing. And with all that, we have fun, and that's the main. As long as we have fun, we're going to keep doing it.
Well, racing 60-plus times a year, Jeff, you got to be having a blast.
Well, I'll tell you, I did this in 2 years. I ran late miles and modified at one track, and that track I won the points in the modified and won the points in the late models. Did it one time, never been done. I came back 2 years later and did it again. Them 2 years, I raced almost 100 times in 1 year.
I tell you what, man, from what little bit I've seen you coming down to Florida and the few races I've gotten a chance to see you race, I think that, you know, don't be surprised one day if one of those World of Outlaws guys with the late models comes along and says, hey, come take my ride for me here and see if you can do any better than my last guy did, because I think you could make it happen for him.
Well, and I, you know, I'd sure give him a heck of a try, and I really like doing this. And if something came along with the late model, you know, I would sure jump in there, but right now, me and my wife, I mean, we own everything we got. It's all ours. And yeah, I've drove for other people, and that's a lot of fun. But on the other hand, I kind of like to do what I, you know, if we don't want to race tonight, we don't have to race tonight. But if we want to load up and go race somewhere that's gone all weekend, we can. And we do it as a family. My oldest boy's racing now. He's in a sportsman car, and I got a younger boy that's 14, and we're going to put him in a car here in another year. And just kind of keep it in the family, and as long as they want to do it, that's fine. If they don't, you know what, there's too many other things out there to do in life besides race.
All right, man. Well, we appreciate you stopping by and talking to us, Jeff. We hope to see you down again next year for the Winter Nationals, and hopefully we'll have you right back here sometime.
Yeah,
I sure appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, Jeff, we'll definitely have you back on before the Winter Nationals. You gave us a lot of things to think about. And,
I'm telling you.
We appreciate it.
I'll be back down here. You know, we got disqualified this year, finished fifth, and lost a muffler. But you know what? that's their rules. And, hey, you know what? We got to go by it. And
you know what, Bill? He's one of the few northern drivers I've ever heard talk about the tide at East Bay.
That's right. Yeah,
that's a definite advantage.
A 10-minute talk to him there in the pits at North Florida Speedway.
Jeff. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Thanks, Jeff.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jeff.
Yep.
All right.
That was one great interview
Jeff
there,
Leica,
Bill.
Jeff Leica, man.
That was good. Right. This guy, right. 64, just... Jack, this guy races 60-plus times a year in four different states at 16 different racetracks last year.
It's because he loves it.
He loves it.
We're going to talk to another guy here in a minute. I think we ought to.
He goes through.
You know who I think we ought to talk to?
Well, right now we're talking to another dirt guy.
I think we should.
Who? An announcer.
An announcer? An announcer who races on dirt?
A dirt announcer? A dirty announcer? A dirty announcer? I thought we were going to talk to a late model guy.
Scary. I need some more coffee.
I got tinkle.
We got to go. Tinkle.
What do you have, Bill?
We have the man himself, the voice of the Lucas Oil Late Model Series, and many things beyond that, I believe. He just hasn't let me in on all of them yet. James Essex. James, welcome to the show.
Very good, guys. Thanks for letting me be on tonight.
Hey, man. Now, listen, you did an awesome job at East Bay, where I ran across and bumped into you. But you do a lot of announcing in a lot of places, from what I understand.
Well, I, of course, do the full, all the Lucas Oil Late Model Dirt Series events, and I do all the color commentary on the Speed Channel races that we have, which we just signed a new 3-year contract with Speed Channel with the series to about 40 races over the next 3 years we'll be doing. So that, and sometimes do a little Battle of the Bluegrass when the need arises and other things. And just I really enjoy it. It's really part of it I really enjoy doing.
Now, what part of the country are you actually living in? Where do you stay?
I live in Indiana, and so I'm really basically in the heartland of everything, basically where our series, you know, originates the staff of the series originate in Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio, some in Pennsylvania. So we cover pretty well the gamut as far as the states are concerned up in this way.
Now, listen, how's everybody look forward to a trip like that to Florida to get out of that snow and cold and come on down and get some racing started early in the year like that?
Well, that's a good point. Obviously, yes. And, you know, we'd had up in the Midwest, we'd had a pretty mild winter, quite honestly, up until the end of January when we all left and came down to Tampa. And, you know, as soon as we leave, it gets below zero and have a lot of snow and everything. So, so we were fortunate, you know, to be able to get out. I mean, another day or two, we might not have been able to get out and on some of the flights we took. But otherwise, it's always a good time down there, and we really enjoy the hospitality. The people down there are great.
Hey, listen, now, tell us some of the reasons people need to get out and see a Lucas Oil Late Model Show in their area, because I think it's some great racing, but there's a lot of things happening behind the scenes sometimes when it comes to the drivers, and there was quite a few that showed up for these Winter National runs.
Well, exactly right. You mean, six races and six nights and six different winners, and you know, over 107 different drivers participated with us during the week. Over 50 have made at least one show, and you know, always quality, exciting racing in East Bay. And you know, basically, that's a capsule of what our season was like last year. I mean, we really put on some great shows last year. Had 17 different winners. The year before, we had 20 different winners. So the competition level is top notch, and you know, with the television thing that Lucas Oil wants to get at, they want to get to new fans. You know, I know people sit there and they say, well, you know, why is it a half hour and why this and that? But they're wanting to reach new fans with driver profiles and, you know, some of the racetracks we go to. And I think that's really helped us last year, because being on ESPN2 for 2.5 years, that really kind of, people saw that and kind of saw the quality of racing we have and the type of town with the drivers we have and the racetracks we go to. So that gets them to come out. And like I said, I mean, really, for the most part, last year we had packed grandstands everywhere we went.
How many shows a year do you guys actually do?
We'll be doing 37 races this year in 15 states. You know,
how far away do we travel to the West?
More than we did last year. Last year we ended up with, not counting rainouts, we had 33 that we got in. And you know, the thing of it, like I said, 33 races, 17 different winners, so that's pretty good. And, you know, I'm not saying we'd like to do more. I mean, you know, there's a lot of traveling involved, no matter if it's us or World of Outlaws, whoever it is. I mean, it's a lot of traveling involved. And but I like being out on the road. I mean, I've been, basically was a one track for over 20 years in Brownstown, Indiana, and then traveled off some other series, but you know, I like going and meeting the people and you know, seeing the drivers in that area that you read about and hear about, but don't get a chance to see them and see how they stack up against our guys.
Well, you know, there's a lot of great shows and racing shows around the country, and you know, maybe some sprint car fans would disagree with me. I'm sure they would, but you know, for full-bodied race cars, dirt late models just got to take the cake. I mean, the guy's running along in eighth place, and the next thing you know, two laps later, he's in first. I mean,
right.
It's awesomely exciting. And people, there's so many people that don't go. They go only to asphalt tracks. It always drives us crazy. We try to just go see the dirt. You know, I mean, most of the races I go to are on asphalt, but, man, the wintertime down here, and during the year we catch dirt late model races at East Bay, but you guys put on one hell of a show. I mean, you get a car going down the back straight on three wheels all the way down the track. You know, it's awesome,
right,
man.
Well, the thing of it is, I mean, comparing it versus asphalt track or asphalt racing and sprint car racing, I mean, you know, growing up here in Indiana, I mean, this is sprint car country. I mean, this is home of Steve Kinzer. This, you know, probably the greatest sprint car driver that's ever lived is Steve Kinzer. And, you know, and the way it used to be around here, it used to be all wing sprints. And then about 15 years ago, it all changed to non-wing. So what you have is better competition with the non-wing. I mean, whether it's USAC or Midwest Sprint Car Series or whoever, find that there's a lot more cars non-wing than there are wing. So and as far as the late models are concerned versus asphalt, I mean, it's just amazing to me. I mean, I talk to people that are NASCAR fans, you know, and you know, of course, that's the end thing to be as a NASCAR fan. I mean, you got to have your favorite driver, your favorite whatever. But in late model racing, you know, these people that go to NASCAR, they know nothing about dirt track racing, a lot of them. And it's like, you know, oh, they're afraid to get dirty or it's loud or whatever. But, you know, you go to a cup race, it's loud. I mean, everybody knows, that goes to one knows how loud it is. But the racing is so much better. I mean, why sit there 3 or 4 hours and you can sit on TV and watch a NASCAR race and fall asleep mainly. But,
you got some, you know, diehard dirt fans, right, though, that come down, especially for, like, Winter Nationals, getting out of the snow and stuff.
Exactly. So it's just like, and they support, I mean, the driver's sheet, T-shirts, nicknames, you know, everything is just so unique and fun and interesting about dirt late model racing versus any of the other forms of racing that it's, of course, I've grown up in it, so I can, you know, it's easy for me to say that, but, you know, getting around and seeing how this sport is, it really exploded in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, quite honestly, of, you know, the quality of the racetracks. I mean, you have the tracks at, you know, Lucas Oil Speedway in Missouri, you have, you know, the dirt track at Lowe's at Charlotte, you have all these other tracks cropping up that are really state-of-the-art facilities, and you never saw that 15 or 20 years ago. I mean, you know, you even have a track like in Eldora, you know, that Tony owns, and it's like, you know, been going there for years. And, you know, quite honestly, that was not one of the best facilities in racing. But over the years, I mean, they gradually build it up, and now Tony's taking it a step further, I mean, you know, and putting a lot of money into this and really trying to make it to where it's fan-friendly and driver-friendly.
Yeah, James, we're gonna talk to one of those guys that's helped make dirt late models as popular as it is today, and Steve Francis here in a few minutes.
Absolutely, and you know, Steve's a great driver and does a great job, and you know, he's been around it. He's been around a long time. I mean, he started basically back when there were wedge cars.
Yeah, James, I was gonna say that I still get people when I go to East Bay. They'll walk up and go, man, it was so cool, the old Have a Tampa dirt late models and stuff and things like that that they've been watching for years. And so once they're hooked, and they keep coming back.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you saw how the crowds were. And, you know, like I say, the thing about the sprint car crowd, and I've had a couple of promoters and a couple, you know, fans, I think the sprint car crowd mainly is grown old. I'm not being disrespectful. They've grown older over the years. You don't have any new fans like you see in the late models. I mean, you see the young kids, you know, the teenager, you know, you got teenagers racing, you got, you know, the kids that are 5, 6, 7, 8 years old coming, they've got their favorite shirt on or their favorite driver, you know, whether it's Steve Francis or Donnie Moran or Scott Blomquist. I mean, they just, it's just really, it's a neat thing, and it's a family thing that people can do together. And, you know, what bugs me the most, I see, you know, all these teenagers coming into it, and I think they're all doing a great job, but, you know, you hear people criticize, oh, they're too young, they shouldn't be out there, they don't even have a driver's license, how are they? But by golly, it's better than a lot of things that are going on today in the world that they could be out doing that's not so good, you know what I mean?
Hey, James, buddy, we appreciate you talking.
Absolutely.
You actually bumped up against our time frame here. We're already blown past
sorry.
That.
I'm sorry about that.
Hey, that's okay, man. We're glad to talk to you, and we hope to get a chance maybe later in the year. We'll give you a shout when we see some big news happening over in the Lucas Oil. We'll give you a shout, man.
LucasDirt.com, our newly redesigned website. Check us out, and our next race will be at Brownstown, Indiana on March 31st, so hopefully we'll see a lot of people after that.
All right, man.
Thanks so much, man.
Thanks, guys.
You know what I forgot to do? I wanted to give a shout out real quick. There is a guy that wrote his first race report this past weekend. Bill Memorial Hill, Bill Rivers.
He did a great job, didn't
I'm
he?
I'm impressed.
He did a wonderful job.
I am very impressed
That's
with
right.
this guy.
That's
what, what do you think is this, the sound of this name? DeSoto Super Speedway Thursday Night Thunder.
What about it?
Do you think that sounds good for a show name?
Oh, you're starting a new show.
I've been in contact with a couple sponsors that might help me along.
Well,
that would
be wonderful.
A couple of the logistics we got to work out.
That'd be wonderful.
No.
That'd be wonderful.
I'm thinking about it, yeah.
That'd be wonderful.
Yep.
All right, let's get away from all this pretend stuff, and let's get an opportunity to talk to one of the guys who is late model racing in the last 10 to 15 years. He's
superstar.
The guy.
Superstar.
He has brought it to the forefront many a time, some epic battles with some of the other great late model racers. He is the Kentucky Colonel himself, Steve Francis. How you doing,
all
Steve?
Right.
Pretty good. How about you guys?
Man, it's awesome. Awesome to get a chance to talk to you again. It's been almost, I checked it out, almost 5.5 years since we've talked to each other on a radio show like this. And I hope this brings you some more good luck like it used to.
I hope so, too. We could use a little. Our speed weeks was average. I mean, it wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. You know, we just
when there's as many cars as there is down there anymore, you know, there's as much luck has as much to do with everything as anything does anymore down there.
Now you've come into the Winter Nationals at times, though, won a few races and padded the bank account to get your year started. How does this kind of rate with those when you come to an average year, you say?
I mean, we probably broke out. I haven't got all the numbers finished yet. But, you know, on a 1 to 10, it was probably a 6 or 7, you know, for worse.
Now, you've been coming down here for many years, Steve, and like you just said, that you know, there's a lot of cars coming now. When did you see that explosion start of the amount of cars coming to the Winter Nationals down here?
Really, it all started here a few years ago when we had that, the extreme in the world of Outlaws, I think it was at that time. When that started happening, you know, that enabled a lot of people to go to both racetracks. It split everybody up that year. And, you know, ever since then, it's kind of been that way. So what was that, 4 or 5 years ago? Somewhere in that area.
Right.
You know, a lot of people go down there to get their season started off. A lot of people go down there and spend half their year's budget to race for a week.
Yeah, but don't you miss the Havoc Tampa Dirt days when you and Eckert used to battle it out up front and beat on each other?
Yeah, you know, actually, it was a lot more fun then. It was a whole lot less political than it's gotten here in the last 4 or 5 years. You know, then we just went, we raced, we had fun. The last 4 or 5 years seems like it's all politics and, you know, this guy wants to do that, and that guy wants to do this. And
see, now that's where I figured Steve Francis never bent to the political side. I mean, you went racing for racing as pure as it could be. And you always struck me as the guy who's, hey, I want to go race for $10,000 as opposed to $8,000, so it doesn't matter to me who's there.
Well, that's kind of the way I always have been, and I still am. But, you know, I mean, you know, the Outlaw Series has a good points fund. The Lucas Oil has a good series. You know, we're fortunate right now. There are two good series out there to go do it. But what the series have to also look at is, you know, they've got us going, you know, basically from Florida, whether it's Lucas or Outlaw. You know, you're basically going from Florida to Kansas, you know, up through Pennsylvania and all that. So they have to keep an eye on this fuel costs and stuff to justify, you know, what we're trying to do, you know, because there's guys, we're trying to make a living too. And I understand they got to make a living, but we got to make a living too.
Right. Well, and they've got to realize too that you're providing the entertainment the whole way along. Now, running the super late model, traveling that much, is there that much money in it for you to make that much traveling?
You know, it all depends on your year. You know, we've been fortunate. We've had, you know, 6, 8, 9. About 9 or 10 really good seasons in a row. So, you know, we've been able to put some stuff back and things like that. But it's still, you know, you have to be very, very careful. You can't just go out blowing money, that's for sure.
Well, now you've got some great sponsors, and you always seem to get a hold of some good sponsors along the way. But it seems to me that every time somebody came out with a new item, whether it's a new rear end or a new transmission or a new whatever, that you were able to get a hold of it, figure it out quickly, and make it work for you.
Well, you know, we've been doing this. This would be my, I don't know, 24th year, something like that, of doing this.
Wow.
I've never done anything else, never made a living doing anything else. So, you know, I have a lot of friends through the industry, you know, whether it be with the people that build the rear end or the people that build the shocks or whatever. You know, we've been really, really fortunate to, you know, have had relationships with those people. And to my knowledge right now, any of them that I've had, I can still, you know, still go back and talk to those people. You know, we've tried not to burn any bridges. I'm still friends with a lot. You know, I was on the Olin shocks for a while. We switched to Integra, but, you know, we still get along well with, you know, Jason Young and all the guys at Olin. You know, just business decisions sometimes, you know, sometimes interpret that. But the other thing is, you know, for us to make a change, it doesn't happen a lot. You know, we were, we had the Russell Baker Chevrolet Motors for, like, I think 10 years. We had the Mopar stuff for 7 years, and we just switched to custom this year, back to the Chevrolet stuff this year. So, you know, I've been in the Rocket Chassis. I think this is 10 or this is 11th year with them. So, you know, most of my relationships are pretty long-term, and that helps a lot, too. You know, companies that come to you with new products and stuff, they know you're going to be, you know, pretty loyal if you have that reputation.
How did you get the nickname, the Kentucky Colonel? Where'd that come in at, and who labeled you?
I'm actually an honorary Kentucky Colonel.
There you go,
like a Confederate Kentucky Colonel?
Yeah. Well, that's but a that's
it's
a
kind of an honorary thing that the governor does.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
You know, for like achievement, you know, whether it be local.
Must have had a governor who was a big race fan at some point.
Yeah. Well, actually, it was done for me down at Gaffney, the first Stars Championship. The governor came and made me an honorary Kentucky Colonel there.
Wow, that's an awesome racetrack too, Gaffney.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're gonna. We might even try to go there this Sunday. You know, we're going to go to Bulls Gap, I think, Friday and Saturday, you know, depending on the weather and everything like that. And, you know, see what kind of shape we're in when we leave Gap, or see when we leave the Gap, and probably try to head to Gaffney on Sunday.
How many times do you estimate that you race a year, Steve?
All depends on whether I go to Australia or not. The last time I went to Australia, which would have been 04, 05, you know, the winter between 04 and 05 there, that year we had 3 weekends that I wasn't at a racetrack.
That's
now,
awesome.
In Australia, how many races can you get in their season down there?
All depends. I was down there 7 weeks, I think, that time. I think I raced 14 or 15, 16 times, something like that. I ran as many as 22 in 6 weeks before down there.
Wow.
And we talked to...
just all depends on, you know, the way the scheduling and, you know, weather. And it's the same as over here.
We talked to Donnie Schatz, and he was down there, you know, running the sprint cars. And he says the sprint cars are a big deal down there. Now, you're running a late model down there?
Yeah. We actually run what they call a sedan car, a super sedan car. Actually, a right-hand drive go around the racetrack the same way, just sit on the wrong side of the car. The sprints, it's kind of opposite here. You know, the sprints are not as popular here as they are over there. Like, the late model seems to be the most popular class over here of any kind of dirt car. And over there, it seems to be more of the sprint car, midget type car. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, they can come here and buy their car. Everything is very expensive in Australia. They can come here and buy their American car, you know, when Donnie Schatz and Steve Kendrick and them guys are down there running them races, they can buy their cars right there.
Wow.
Where over here, you know, we have all left-hand drive late models, they're right-hand drive. So you have to build everything down there, and getting the parts shipped and everything like that is just, you know, a big hassle. And that's really hurt it over there.
Now, when you go to Australia, though, does the weight transfer kind of lift you off the ground when that tire comes off the ground?
Yeah, you know, it's a way different feel, you know, when you sit out there. You know, you're on, it's quite a bit different style car.
How long did it take you to get the hang of that, though, man?
About 1 or 2 laps. You know, your first couple laps, you run the infield. You run the left front tire up in the infield, you know, just because you're used to being the other side. And you're used to leaving that barrier between you and the wall of the race car. Well, when you're sitting over there, you don't... the first couple laps, you run in the infield, and after that, you pretty much got it figured out.
You're going sideways out of the turn, and that wall is coming fast.
And you're
fast,
the first thing to get to the wall. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome, man, and I know those kind of trips are kind of cool. They give you an opportunity to get out there and see some more people. But now I want to talk to you about your fan base a little bit, because with all these years of racing, there's an awful lot of people that still show up all season long around Florida with your shirts on and so forth. How cool has it been to have those people continue to be great supporters of yours no matter where you were racing or what kind of car or who you're running for? They keep coming back to see Steve Francis race.
Hey, you know, the fans are what, you know, without the fans, we don't make a living. So, you know, you got to take that time. You've got to spend time with them. You know, when you see, you know, a 6, 7, 8, 10-year-old kid come up and say, you know, this is what I want to do, or, you know, just really excited to meet you or something like that, kind of makes your day.
Well, that's pretty awesome, man. And I got to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule, getting cars ready, whatever you're doing, to talk to us here at Short Track America's Real Racing USA, and we want to thank you so much. And hopefully when you get back into town, you're coming back this way, or even the middle of the year here, maybe we'll grab you again and catch you when you win one of those big ones.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, we would definitely do it again anytime you guys want to. What old James Essex had to say there? You were talking to him earlier.
Oh, he was high on the whole program, and when we mentioned your name, he thought you were a great ambassador to the sport, period, and you'd been around about as long as he had when it come to racing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I
remember James used to promote the Brownstown Speedway, and
yep.
We're going to go do the Lucas Oil race there, kind of do a few of those. We're going to run both series as long as we can, and then kind of step back and look and see where we're situated points-wise in both, and... You know, see what, you know, I know Spencer Wilson and James have a lot of things working with the Lucas series. Sit back and take a look at, you know, where everything is at that point, and then decide what we're going to do for the year. Kind of just go off of that. You know, it's you know, like I say, we're very, very fortunate at this time with what, you know, with where our sport is, with having two major sanctioning bodies that, you know, enable more guys to make a living. And they both got very, very good, very, very competitive racers. You know, the fan doesn't get cheated if he goes to Lucas Oil Race or World of Outlaws Race because there's X amount of talented drivers at either one.
SteveFrancisRacing.com. Steve, thanks a lot for being on the show with us tonight, bro.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, Steve.
There's the Kentucky Colonel, ladies
the
and gentlemen.
The Kentucky
he's
Colonel.
A, he's
I'll
an
explain
awesome
what that
interview.
Kentucky Colonel he's, thing is to you later, Bill.
No, I understand it. I just was not sure if that's
it's
how
a little
got
more,
it.
It's a little more detailed than what he said.
Is it Lonnie Buff?
Lenny Buff.
I think you need to call Lenny Buff and tell him that Steve's making every effort to come to his track at Gaffney, South Carolina.
He'll be there. $10,000. Steve will be there.
Yeah. That's what he said.
Right.
As long as Bull's Gap don't be too bad.
Bull's Gap.
Oof. Oh, my goodness. So, they, Rick, what are you talking about now, this Thursday Night Thunder thing? What are you talking about?
DeSoto Super Speedway Thursday Night Thunder.
You're going to do another show?
Yes.
Thursday nights.
Wow. Live from DeSoto Super Speedway.
And when do you start?
I haven't decided yet. We got to get the logistics. Because I want to do this live. I don't want to record it.
Oh, okay. I got you.
All right. So we got to check that. And
we have to record it so you have a copy.
Okay. Yes, okay. But I want to do it live.
Lenny.
We were just talking to Steve Francis about going racing and going to those big dollar races. And we've got on the phone with us now the promoter of Cherokee Speedway in Gaffney, South Carolina, that $10,000 to win Southern All-Star Dirt Late Model Race coming up down there. And we believe Steve may show up to take a swing at it. How we doing down there, Lenny?
Doing good.
Where are you at, Lenny? It sounds like you got a party going on, man. How did I miss this?
Nah, just a couple of my friends come out to eat, and we're fixing to wrap it up.
A couple of your friends eating. Now, how did Cherokee Speedway get to be one of the big races of the year? They're paying $10,000 to win.
I was kind of always enthused with the ice bowl thing going on at Talladega. We wanted to have something early in the year in South Carolina. That's about as early as you can get the first week of March.
You going to have good weather?
Yeah, they're calling for good weather on Saturday and Sunday. Should be in the upper 60s.
Upper 60s. Yeah, that's not bad at all, I guess, upper 60s.
Now, I've seen pictures of this racetrack. It's literally located in the valley in the mountains, right?
Yeah, we're located on exit 96 on I-85. It's right on the South Carolina-North Carolina line.
What are you doing during the normal racing season, though? What's the big draw for Gaffney, South Carolina's Cherokee Speedway?
This year we're going to headline the crate car super late models weekly, and then the crate cars be next under them, and we're going to run 7 divisions weekly.
Well, there you go. That running late models weekly won't hurt you at all. I guarantee that.
Oh no, we went through a lot of changes over the winter. We went from a half mile to a 3/8. We've reconfigured the whole racetrack to hopefully get better racing.
So now you're going to have this $10,000 to win race coming up. That's going to be televised on a pay-per-view deal?
Yes. Yeah. Don Smith out of Morgan, North Carolina, come to me, and they're going to try to work up a deal to the pay-per-view kind of thing. And hopefully it'll work out good, you know.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to make sure that after you have this program and do this thing, we're going to get you back on here and find out how it went, and you can tell us all the ins and outs, the goods and bads of it, because we know it's a difficult sale sometimes on the Internet, but yet we hope that it works out for you, because that means that the people are starting to pay attention out there in the World Wide Web of what's going on in racing.
Oh, yeah, it's huge in the World Wide Web, that's for sure.
Now, you guys do use an Internet programming or Internet website to help promote the racetrack and stuff. What have you found have been the great returns or the drawbacks of doing Internet kind of marketing?
Pretty much about anything you can do on the Internet is pretty good. You have some problem with the message board. You get people who don't really know things, and, you know, they talk about it and they don't know, and then you explain it to them, then they understand. You got to weed through the bad and the good, but the Internet, all in all, it's a real good source of advertising. And the cheapest way you can advertise. You know, we can't afford to advertise on TV and radio no more, hardly.
Oh, man, it sounds like it's a hard sell sometimes, but where do you get your fan base from? Do they come from 100 miles away or just around a local area about 50 miles?
I would say on our big races, we pull from probably 150 miles away. It's pretty big draw down here in this part of the country to get, you know, when we have the big dollar races.
How many people can you hold in the grandstands? How many seats you got?
I can hold about 3,300. Sitting there.
Well, that's a pretty good size crowd for a $10,000 win race. That should be a lot of fun to pack them in that tight and have some good racing, man.
Yeah, last year in March we had a full house and had a full pit. And hopefully this year we're going to have better car count and at least as many people watching. You know, hopefully with what we've done to the racetrack, we're going to have some better racing and some tighter racing.
Well, man, that sounds like an awesome, awesome year set up for 2007 with the Cherokee Speedway. We'll look forward to hearing more good things about it, okay?
Oh, yeah.
All right, man. We appreciate you taking some time stopping in with us. We hopefully draw a few extra people your way and help you out with that big race coming up.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on tonight.
Yeah, you cannot beat a dirt late model race anytime. That's all there is to it.
Nope, can't do that. Well, tell everybody that's having the party behind you, we appreciate them joining in with us, too, and we will talk to you next time, man.
All right, man.
All right.
Wow.
Bill, how about a commercial real quick?
Yeah, what do you think?
How about a commercial real quick?
I think I got another one in here.
Real quick. Then we're going to come back with Bobby Sears and Chris Fontaine and
wrap this bad boy up.
Tim Bryan. We got some work to do, boys.
We got some work to do.
We'll be right back. Jack, we got one of the best interviews you felt you did in a while sitting here online with us. Bobby Sears. How you doing, Bobby?
Pretty good. I can't hardly hear you.
Oh, you can't? Well, we'll have to talk up.
Turn your hearing aid up now, Bobby.
Yeah, okay.
All right. All right, you're live on Real Racing USA with Bill Green, Jack Smith, and Rick Angies, man. Now, welcome to the show.
All right. Good evening, everybody.
Now, I got to ask you, Bobby, because I wasn't able to be there, but were you a little surprised with your Pete Orr Sportsmanship Award?
I was more than a little surprised. I was... what's the word, flabbergasted or whatever. And, you know, it was just, I don't guess I've seen him handed out at the last two or three that was, and, you know, and I actually remember some of it. Somebody did get one, but, you know, just to, you know, never saw it, and then all of a sudden it's in his hands, and they're handed to me. It was just, you know, it was unbelievable.
Well, it's got to be nice to know that, you know, all the effort you do put forth in racing and all the things you've done over the years to help people out, you know, does get recognized in a way. We're sorry it's got to be such a small way. It's a little bitty trophy for you, but, I mean, it's a nice-sized trophy, but don't get me wrong. But there ain't no monetary deal or anything else with it, so I'm just trying to say that...
Hey, tell him, Bobby, that's a big trophy, man.
It's a big trophy, that's all. Yeah. But I'm just saying that it is nice to get, you know, recognized for some of the things you do.
Well, yeah, it is. It makes you reflect back on, you know, time, you know, all the people that you've raced against and how you've raced and how you've, you know... if you did have problems, how you handled them on the track or how you handled them in the pits or at the scales or how you handled them next week when they called you in, you know, to see what little problems you had, a little scuff you had out there on the track. And then to see somebody that really appreciates all the effort and all the work that went into, you know, getting there every week and you know, performing, it was quite an award.
Couple questions, Bobby. One, how many mini stock championships have you earned?
13 or 14 years.
Okay, and how many late model championships?
5 years.
And now as a car owner, how many championships you had as a car owner? Three?
The Sarah and two good years, three. And, you know, rookie of the year with the first year. Missed it by, I think, 16 points.
Who was your driver in the Sarah series?
Michael Williams.
There you go, man. What a career.
I'm telling you.
We've done well from the Volkswagen days all the way up to, you know, it's... really, you know, really weird when you look at it. I never owned a Chevrolet until I raced it.
Yeah, Bill was just, like, asking me, Volkswagens, was that a Hialeah? No, that's a fast car back in the day.
Yeah, that was Volkswagen Bugs back in, you know, the 60s and
many stops. 70s.
Well, that was the day. And I went down to Hialeah one time. I didn't run down there, but I went down there, and they had about 40 of them. And a good portion of them was all Volkswagen Bugs and Pinos and...
yeah, that's where I remembered seeing some, you know, Bugs and stuff running mini stock series was the
high right.
Idea. Yeah,
we ran them quite heavily over at Golden Gate too. We ran over there for 2 or 3 years.
Well, I don't want to date you too bad, but let's tell everybody, when did you get into racing and get started in it as a youngster?
We started with the Volkswagen Bug somewhere around 68.
68.
And now these days you're up against it. You're going to try to make it three in a row in the Goodyear, the Fast Car Goodyear Challenge Late Model Series with your driver, Rich Clouser. When is your first race is coming up? Not too far in the distance.
First race is March the 10th at Lakeland.
At Lakeland with the support race for the Hooters Pro Cup, huh?
Yes.
All right.
Looking forward to getting down there. So we're only scheduled one race, and we got two there, so I'm looking forward for it.
Yeah, so now this, you're all prepared to run the full season. You're still out there digging for some sponsorships, but you've overcome adversity each year to win that championship. And as a matter of fact, if people listen to the interview that you and I shared recently, which is available on Short Track America, they'll find that you find a way to win.
Well, if you're going to go, we go for a reason. We go to run up front. And, yes, you just dig down and find a way. You figure out what you got to do or what the car's got to have. You know, most of the time the driver, he's ready. You just got to have the equipment and the tires underneath him to get him there.
Well, now I want to ask you a couple of questions and maybe just one quick one, Bobby, about the interview you did with Jack recently. It talked about a lot of the ins and outs and nuts and bolts of racing and making it work. Those kind of things, a lot of folks don't want to give up their trade secrets, but it sounded like you went into detail about some of the things you thought could help the local racer do a little bit better.
Well, you know, when you run Saturday night or Friday night or Saturday night and the car ain't doing what it's supposed to do, or you know the car was, you know, real loose all the time, every lap, or it was pushing the nose real bad, you come home and you try to figure out what caused that. Was it a spring problem? Was it a shock problem? Or, you know, you can blame it on tires, but usually at the tires is not the full problem. So what we do is try to figure out what we got to do to the car to try to figure out why it was pushing all night long. And those are the things you do. You got to figure out what your problem is, because you go back next week, you ain't done nothing, you go have the same problem.
So how did you get hooked up with Rich Clouser?
We watched him race for quite a few years, and, you know, in the I guess bombers and other things that he was running, and when Michael Williams was running with us, he got tied in with South 40, and South 40 wanted him to stay with the super late models to spend more time with him. And I told Danny, which is my son and the crew chief of that car, I told him, I said, if I ever quit and I don't sell the car, I'm gonna put that kid in a late model. And we called him one time and met him out of Speed World, and I don't know, about 8 or 10 laps, he was running just as fast as you know, Michael was out there in the car. So, you know, he's just a sort of like Davey Allison. He fits the track in the car real good.
I'm telling you, I announced down at DeSoto Speedway, and when he was running street stock down there, the first time I ever saw his car in the pits, instead of having lead weight in the car on the left rear, he had a cylinder head bolted to it.
Well, you know, they didn't have a whole lot of money, so they use what they have.
And he was winning.
He's winning. Yeah. And a lot of it is driving. You know, there's a lot of good cars out there, but the people haven't figured out how to drive them yet. And when they do, they'll find that they can go to the front.
Well, Bobby, it's great having you on the show. We're going to definitely get you back on. Hopefully we can get you in the studio with us, so we can have a more lengthy conversation. We're getting up against the top of the hour.
We need to make him our technical advisor.
Yeah.
But, yeah, people can go to check out a lot more about what Bobby Sears has to say on in the Short Track America website.
ShortTrackAmerica1.com.
RealRacingUSA.com.
Absolutely.
Take you to the same place. Absolutely. Thank you very much, Bobby, for spending a few minutes, man. I'm sorry we didn't have more time, but we'll get you back again. You can count on
that.
We'll
get him in here. I want him here.
Yeah, we'll get him to drive over
here. We'll get together one of these days, guys.
There you go, man. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for calling, man. I appreciate what you're doing.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bobby.
Okay.
Bobby Sears.
No doubt. We really,
sportsman.
Turn your thing down a little bit? How come?
Turn my mic down just a little bit.
I didn't turn it up.
The compressor's compressing.
I didn't turn it up.
It's fine.
It's okay. All right.
You're all right.
Yeah. Real Racing USA. Boy, this thing's like, this train's rolling here.
Yeah.
You know who I want to talk to? I want to talk to an ASA driver. How about Chris Fontaine.
Chris Fontaine?
Number 47. Remember when we talked to the ASA Matt Pryor?
Yeah.
Matt was he mentioned Chris several times. He mentioned Chris several times. Rookie of the year. What was Bill? Is Bill having a psychotic break on us here? Yeah. Bill, we've done fine. Look, we're an hour and 45, 50 minutes into the show. Everything's been going pretty smooth tonight, and you're going to have a psychotic break on us here. Calm down.
Sitting here watching American Idol.
Jacob, hello.
He's sitting there watching American Idol. He's telling me what he's doing.
Chris, that's what do on a, this is Jack Smith
here.
You're watching American Idol?
Yes, sir. I've been watching it since the start. I started watching it whenever they had all the people that were terrible, and it got me interested in it. So now I'm sitting at home watching it. I finished everything up today, getting the cars ready, and on their way. They're leaving at midnight tonight to head for Texas. So getting everything wrapped up and ready for that first race in San Antonio.
Hey, is that girl with the naked picture still on?
Rick,
I don't know.
Oh, my God. Here we go. Are you kind of like a wannabe singer in any way, shape, form, or fashion?
Oh, no. I'm going to say I'm a wannabe race car driver, if anything. Definitely not a singer, though.
Hey, Chris, I got a question for you right off the bat here. Do you ever feel like you're the bridesmaid here? I mean, how many times are you going to come in second, man? It seems to happen where just one little, you're just one little ounce away from a ton of wins.
Yeah, it really seems that fate's really making me work hard for it, and it was unfortunate this year that we came in second, and we really, really tried and dedicated a lot of time to that championship, and I just feel bad for my crew and family and everybody. We just tried so hard, and it was a real disappointment, but still we're proud of it. There's a lot of good drivers and cars and teams in that series, and as far as floor concerns, that's one of the top series that there is, and proud that we got second, and proud for our sponsors and everything, but it still was definitely a heartbreaker to lose it in the last two races.
Yeah, well, Chris, you had the middle part of that season. I mean, you were just dominating. You had wins, you had top fives. The car was just unstoppable, and then the second half of the season, it just fell apart.
Yeah, we had two races there. We were really dominant, and there was a rainout, and after that rainout, our car just would not, I don't know what happened, it just wouldn't go back to being the same, and just we could not get it back to having the dominance that we had had there for a few months, and we're looking forward to this year, though, and trying to get some of that back and all the new tracks that we're going to go to, and the cars are a little bit different. We've spent the last 3 months totally dedicating every second to making those cars as fast as we possibly can.
You got to be looking up to 2007, though. It's already starting off on a good note.
Yeah, Kevin Ingram, my crew chief, went down to Speed Weeks and had some real good success down there, and I want to congratulate him. And hopefully that'll carry over into our program that he's managing, and hopefully it'll look good and go forward.
Chris, were you around in the days of, were you racing late models in the days of the Sarah series?
I raced, I think, a year in the Sarah series. Didn't have the success that I wanted, but it was my first year in a full-size car.
You get out to Texas, the Texas promoter at the track where you're going is Rick Day, and he was the guy who ran the Sarah series.
Yes, sir.
We'll leave it at that.
Are you stunned?
We'll leave it at that.
I don't know.
He ran Sarah Series at Sunshine.
Some of that. I talked about it, but we've been just concentrating on so much of the performance of our cars and just really trying to get ready and putting some stuff together with Finish Line Fabrication race cars. And we're going to try and run their house car and just look forward to trying to represent them very well.
So you're going to be racing the ASA Challenge Late Model Series, and also the ASA South Late Model Series. You're going to try to run them both?
Yes, sir. We're going to run them both, and maybe later on in the year, if we're doing better in points than one or the other, maybe just kind of concentrate on one and really see how everything's looking. The first half of the season, though, really concentrate on both of them and see what kind of position we can put ourselves in to win the championship. It's something that has kind of been hard for me to do, and just come so close within so points of a really good competitors like Jeff Chiquette, and just looking forward to the competition and hopefully some wins and maybe get a Rookie of the Year or championship.
What's behind the decision to go with the ASA as opposed to some other direction? What was the guiding light there?
I think the exposure to the media that they get and also the different tracks that they run. We run the Mill Milwaukee Mile, so I'll get a little more experience on bigger tracks and just kind of get out of Florida and kind of broaden my horizon and just get a little more experience on the tracks of America. And they do get a little more exposure and racing against some other people. I think Corelli won the championship last year in the South, or I think it was one of them. And they've got a ride this year somewhere or getting into one of the developing programs. So just kind of the bigger exposure and more diversity in tracks out of Florida.
Good deal. What do you have a website where people can keep up with your progress throughout the year?
Yes, sir. It's Chris Fontaine at ChrisFontaine.com, or that's the email. The ChrisFontaine.com is the website.
There you go.
They'll have our schedule and up-to-date photos.
All right, man. Good deal.
Well, we're sorry we bumped up against the top of the hour so quick, but we appreciate you stopping by and chatting with us for a few minutes.
We'll check back with you. We'll keep up with your progress as the whole thing follows, because we'll be right on top of the ASA late model series.
Yeah, go win that race. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
All right, thank you very much.
Chris Fontaine getting it done, doing a good job.
Now he's a good race car driver.
Now, Rick.
Welcome to the 9 o'clock
hour. He's a
good
race car driver.
We're into hour number 3 of the show.
It can get brutal in the late hours of real racing USA.
Yeah, I'm looking over his website right now and shows the preparations for the ASA cars. It's going to be the familiar number 47, flame front end.
Yeah, there's another late
Chris,
model.
Chris, we're in Hooters Pro Cup for a little bit.
Hey, just a minute. Just a minute.
It was longer than a minute.
Was it?
Discount auto parts. Discount auto parts.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he ran like he was teammates with Derek Kelly. He owned Discount Auto Parts.
Yeah, I understand all that. I do understand all that. You know, there's another late model series
trying
out there,
to be
too.
Nice.
Yeah, there's another late model series out there. It's the Georgia Asphalt Series.
Gas.
Yeah, gas.
Gas.
And gas is...
Bill at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, and gas is... You got that right. And gas is coming up pretty soon here at Five Flag Speedway, and I think we're going to talk to Tim Bryant, the promoter, if Bill's got everything in order.
Bill's good.
Bill's very good. Tim Bryant, promoter of Five Flag Speedway. Welcome to Real Racing USA, man.
Hey, good evening, guys. How's it going?
We don't even want to tell you how it's going. We'll just leave it at that. How you doing, man?
We're jamming a three-hour show in 2 hours.
We're having a good time, that's all.
Well, hey, that's the bottom line, and that's what we like our race fans to do whenever they venture out here to Five Flag.
All right.
What kind of stuff's coming up, man? We got a big late model race coming up, I think.
Stepping on the gas.
We sure do, and I'll tell you what, we're excited. I don't know where the off season went. You know, I heard it said a few weeks ago, I guess right before Daytona, that auto racing has the shortest off season in sport, and it certainly seemed true for us. I mean, just seems like a few short weeks ago we were having a snowball derby.
I started to say they gave you 3 days off after the snowball derby.
Seventh season.
No, Tim, I don't know if anybody has it. They haven't told you yet. In Florida, there is no off season. It does not exist.
I was going to say, you haven't even knocked the dust off the scales from snowball, right?
Well, it hardly seems anyway.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, we are excited about getting started again, and we're opening it up. Of course, we're typically a Friday night track, but we're opening our season with a Saturday night race before some of our other area neighboring tracks open. So Saturday night was open, and we're hosting the Georgia Asphalt Series, which is really grown by leaps and bounds through the middle part of last year. And they finished with a bang, and of course started off last weekend with their opener up in Birmingham. And it'll be their first visit to Five Flags, so we're excited about that.
Now these guys with the Georgia Asphalt Series, they get to come to you more than once during the year, or just the one time?
No, we just have them scheduled one time. However, some of their regulars also compete at various other events that we have here. Several other guys come to mind, Joey Center, Matt Hawkins. Those guys have been coming down running in our Blizzard series for super late models. So they have a lot of guys in that series that are familiar with their way around Five Flags.
Okay, and they also, a bunch of them came for the Snowball Derby.
Yeah, they certainly did, and more specifically the Snowflake 100 that is the night before the Snowball, which has been a pro late model, almost turned into a crate late model, but not exclusively type racing. And I tell you, that level of late model racing is just really getting some popularity in our area.
So the Georgia Asphalt Series, is that basically what we call down here the limited late models?
Well, I think there are some similarities, although there's some differences, too. The cars basically are super late model cars. They just have some limitations on the engine. Most specifically, the majority of the cars have gone to either the GM or the Ford crate engine. We still allow built engines in that division with two-barrel carburetors on them. But the crate engines seem to be the wave of the future.
Yeah, that's the way it's looking like it's going. Well, I'll tell you what, we're up against it right now. We'll call you next week and get the results in that.
Well, actually, the
week after.
It'll be March the 10th.
Oh, March the 10th.
No, as a matter of fact, Tim, what we're going to do is we're going to try to get somebody who's going to race in it next week.
Oh,
and,
okay.
We'll touch base with you. We'll probably have you back on because we just ran up out of time.
Hey, I know how it is, guys, and maybe you could contact Russell Fleeman, the Georgia driver that was victorious at Birmingham last weekend. He'll come in as the points leader.
We'll do it. It's a done deal.
Hey, you give him a call, too. Make sure he calls us.
Okay, I'll see what I can do on that.
All right, Tim, thanks a lot, man.
All right, have a good night.
Wow, you too.
Hey, listen, 2 hours ago we talked to Mike Peters.
Yeah, and we now get a chance to get back to him. And Jack cut him off.
We get back to him now.
Now, what's this about the cars, the people listening in to the
NASCAR?
Nasty car.
Oh, I was just saying we're a voyeuristic society. I mean, we want to be inside the cars. If we could put a camera, you know, inside
the... Voyeuristic society.
Yeah, I mean, if we could read their thoughts, you know, we would find a way to...
So you think we should be inside them cars?
And
I agree.
Well, inside the cars, actually inside the bathrooms, in the driver's lounge, and anywhere that we can put a camera.
I had an in-car camera at that demolition
derby. Wait a minute. Think about it. I just thought of something when he said that, and that is that you can get every channel that you want for a driver and listen to him during a race anywhere, whether it's be on the internet or on Sirius or whatever, but you cannot get the officials channel.
Oh, really?
The NASCAR officials channel is not a
published... You can't get a rule book either.
It's not a published channel.
Yeah. They're not going to let
That's
you do that.
That's interesting.
They're not going to let
I wonder why
do
they
that.
Do that.
It's nasty car.
What do we do here tonight?
We did a little bit of everything. Mike, buddy, you got to come back to
Steve Ball? Francis?
You got to come
Tim
back to
Russell?
Okay.
Sorry Jeff Leka? Lenny Buff? Just Bobby Sears? He's still talking.
He's still talking right
now. It's like I ain't even here.
I know.
Comes to my racetrack, tells me what the hell to do.
All right. So who else do we have on tonight?
I just went through the whole list.
I didn't
Tim Bryant.
Yes.
Yes. Steve Francis, Tim Russell, Jeff Leka, Lenny Buff, Bobby Sears, and Don Redmond.
Bill?
Sounds like a good list to me. We had a good show.
Play the damn music.
Well, I guess it's about that time, huh? All right.
2505 Manatee Avenue East.
Snook River Drill. Hey. Real Racing USA next Tuesday night, 7 to 9 p.m.
The big tall Swede's going to be in here any minute.
Good night now. Yeah.
One more time.